Reform Voices of Torah, Union for Reform Judaism, Shabbat, December 13, 2014, 21 Kislev, 5775, Vayeshev, Genesis 37:1 through 40:23, Haftarah, Amos 2:6 through 3:8, Devar Torah, Clothes Make the Story, by David Siegel. To paraphrase Mark Twain, clothes make the story. Throughout the course of Parashat Vayeshev, references to clothing accentuate and propel the unfolding drama. Joseph's clothes spell trouble. As the parasha opens, the tension between Joseph and his brothers reaches its boiling point. They conspire to kill him out of jealousy, for he is their father's favorite son. But Reuben convinces them not to go that far. In Genesis 37:23-24, we read, "So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped Joseph of his coat, the coat of many colors that he had on. Then they took him and threw him into a pit." It is darkly poetic that the brothers' first act of violence against Joseph attacks his clothing, the special coat given him by Jacob as a sign of paternal favoritism. With Joseph out of the picture, the coat becomes the brothers' vehicle for revenge against Jacob, too. They stain it with goat's blood and show it to Jacob as false evidence that Joseph has been killed. "Do you recognize it?" they ask Jacob, rhetorically and cruelly. The sight of the special coat, now torn and bloodied, breaks Jacob's heart. What goes around? After Joseph's capture and sale into Egyptian slavery, an episode about Judah and Tamar interrupts the narrative. Judah has three sons with his Canaanite wife, Shuah, Er, Onan, and Shelah. Tamar marries Er, who dies. Judah sends his next son, Onan, to perform his brotherly duty by marrying Tamar in order that he might sire an heir for Er. Onan famously refuses and dies. Judah, fearing the death of his third and final son, dodges the responsibility of having Shelah marry Tamar by sending her to her father's house until my son Shelah grows up. See Genesis 38:11. Tamar waits, and even after Shelah reaches marriageable age, Judah balks. So Tamar takes her fate into her own hands, and here's where the action and the clothing get interesting. Having heard that Judah was traveling nearby, Tamar discarded her widow's garb, covered herself up with a veil, wrapped herself up, and stationed herself as a prostitute where Judah would run into her. Judah approaches and propositions her, and Tamar demands a pledge from him to guarantee payment for their transaction. "Your signet seal, your cord, and the staff in your hand," Genesis 38:18. The medieval commentators disagree on what these items are exactly. Rashi says that the second item is not a cord, but the garment with which Judah covered himself. But Rambam disagrees. "It's not plausible," he says, "that he would give her his clothes and walk away from her naked." And so, we come full circle back to where we started with Mark Twain. Clothes make the man. Naked people have little to no influence on society. Clothed or not, Judah ends up playing the fool. After the encounter, Tamar immediately changes out of her veil and puts her widow's garb back on. Judah can't find the prostitute to pay her or get back his items in pledge. He decides to let her keep them, as he says, "lest we become a laughingstock." 3 months later, Judah finds out that Tamar is pregnant illegitimately, so he prepares to punish her. But this plays right into her hand, and she says to Judah, "The man to whom these belong made me pregnant. Acknowledge whose signet seal, cords, and staff these are." Genesis 38:25. The tables have turned on Judah. A chapter earlier, the sons of Jacob, including Judah, presented Joseph's bloodied coat to their father with the words, "Hakerna, do you recognize this?" in Genesis 37:32. Now Tamar uses clothing and the very same words against Judah to expose his hypocrisy. "Hakerna, do you recognize these?" in Genesis 38:25. Radak, Another medieval commentator sums it up beautifully. Citing Bereshit Rabbah 85:11, he says, "The Torah toys with humanity. It said to Judah, 'You said to your father, Hakerna. By your life, Tamar says to you, Hakerna.'" In other words, what goes around comes around. And as Shakespeare put it, "Shall we their fond pageant see? Lord, what fools these mortals be." Joseph's clothes spell trouble, redux. After the Judah and Tamar interlude, the Torah returns to Joseph's fate. Potiphar, a prominent Egyptian, buys Joseph from the Ishmaelite traders and appoints him as head slave of the household. Things are going well until Potiphar's wife takes a liking to her handsome servant Joseph. He rejects her advances repeatedly, but one day, when Joseph and Potiphar's wife are alone in the house, we read in Genesis 39:12, she took hold of him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." He left his garment in her hand, fled, and ran outside. The clothing underscores the action. Potiphar's wife is the aggressor, grabbing Joseph's garment and holding onto it after he flees from her clutches. When Potiphar's wife explains to her servants and then to her husband why she has Joseph's clothing, she lies. Instead of saying what the Torah just told us, that she grabbed his clothing beyada in her hand, in Genesis 39:18, she substitutes the word etzli, near me. "When I raised my voice and cried out, he left his garment near me and fled." With that verbal sleight of hand, Potiphar's wife flips the story from a tale of her aggression against Joseph to an accusation of assault by Joseph. The Torah uses the device of Joseph's clothing to propel the drama, just as it did in the episode of his brother's betrayal at the beginning of the parasha. A change of fate and clothing. Looking ahead to the next parasha, Miketz, we witness Joseph's ascent to power in Egypt. The incident with Potiphar's wife got him thrown in the dungeon, and his ability to interpret dreams became his ticket out. When Pharaoh learns that Joseph might be able to interpret his troubling dreams, we read in Genesis 41:14, he sent to summon Joseph. They hurried him from the pit. He shaved, changed his clothing, and came to Pharaoh. This moment creates a literary bookend to Joseph's abuse by his brothers. Whereas they stripped him of his good clothing and threw him into a pit, Pharaoh now restores Joseph's clothing and removes him from a pit. The reversal of fortune and clothing sets Joseph up to fulfill his youthful dream of ruling over his brothers and father while they bow down to him. See Genesis 37:5-11. Pharaoh completes Joseph's makeover after appointing him as overseer of Egypt's famine preparations. We read in Genesis 41:42, Pharaoh removed his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. He dressed him in linen trappings and placed the gold chain of office around his neck. Joseph's royal garb includes items that Tamar used to expose Judah, linking that interlude with the main narrative through clothing. Throughout these episodes, articles of clothing highlight and drive the unfolding drama. A sophisticated and artful literary hand was at work in these stories, dramatizing the themes of betrayal, hypocrisy, reversal of fortune, and poetic justice that makes Genesis such a compelling text. Rabbi David Siegel is the spiritual leader of the Aspen Jewish Congregation in Aspen and the Roaring Fork Valley of Colorado. He was ordained at Hebrew Union College, Jewish Institute of Religion in New York, and is an alumnus of the Wexner Graduate Fellowship.